What boundaries in improv haven't been pushed?
What is it about improv that attracts some people so fiercely to it?
What aspects of improv are unteachable and have to be learned on your own?
Recorded at UCB Comedy Studios in New York City, this is the Long Form Conversations Podcast with your hosts, Sean Diston and Nicole Dressbell.
Go to Twitter?
Yeah.
Is this super boring?
No, Gethard.
Is it working? Is this up to the standards?
Gethard, you have to understand that this is how we feed the nerds.
This is how the nerds want it.
They want these.
Would you say that I'm being more upfront and forthcoming than Catherine Mudon was?
I would say yes.
At this point, you've named some names.
You've talked about some specific stories.
Wow, Catherine. Naming names.
I have a question here from Pat Regan.
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts on your work at UCB and your work doing stand-up? How do they overlap, and how can you compare them? I mean, there may not be a super long answer here.
Yes,
yeah.
And thank you for very kindly telling me that I tend to ramble.
No, not at all. I'm just saying.
Let's see. Well, the one thing I will say is that I don't mind hecklers. I never encourage them. But when something weird, like when something gets disrupted, I often am like, oh, I feel more comfortable now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to remember the material and the rhythms because this person distracted me and this is just a scene. This person doesn't realize that this is a scene between me and him.
Is this in stand-up, you're saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think the UCB background there, like, I will say that. There are very few stages I feel uncomfortable on, and that's because of my time at UCB. Because when you do, I mean, improv in general, you don't know what you're going to get. UCB, you tend to participate at least a handful of times in your life in shows where you feel strange and sometimes ashamed afterwards because you just did something so bizarre on stage. Mm-hmm. So I think it very much allowed me to go out into the world with less fear than I would have if I didn't do it. So
one sort of story that I remember, because I used to intern at Ask Cat when you were doing it a lot, there was a moment where during a show, I tell this story all the time because I'm always like, you can get an idea from anywhere or you can support anything. One time during an Ask Cat show, middle of a scene or maybe middle of a monologue, a guy just sort of crossed the stage. He just walked across the stage, not really knowing that a show was going on, like, and just sat in his chair in the front row. And then you left the stage and then came back and just walked across the stage at certain parts of the show. Do you remember this show?
I vaguely do remember this, yeah.
I mean, I remember watching that and being like, oh, we just turned this guy interrupting the show into one of the funniest parts of the show. And,
well, what can I say?
Well, it's just one of those you're talking
Nicole,
about.
What can I say?
Well, you're just talking about hecklers. I think that's an interesting point.
That
is
poor
that,
guy.
I think the guy laughed because.
Oh, good.
It didn't seem mean at all. It was just like using that as a mistake, as an idea. And I think that's like kind of speaks to what you're saying with like hecklers and stand up. But yeah, are there points when you're doing improv that you don't do that much improv past the stand-up, but does stand-up influence your improv in any way?
Well, being honest, stand-up has kind of replaced improv in my life. And there's a reason for that, you know? Mm. I needed to move on. Also, I had to come to grips with the fact that, like, I was doing the Chris Gethard show, and I was getting on stage by myself and telling a lot more stories that about me as an individual, and I was becoming more selfish on stage in a way that didn't lend itself to improv. And it took me a very long time to admit that that was okay. And that's a big part of why I left Stepfathers. Mm. It was like, oh, right, I want things to be about me a lot of the time now. So they're very separate in my mind, by and large, because one kind of burnt out as the other one was coming more and more to life. So I don't think they have too much to do with each other. I would say a lot of the skills I've learned at UCB allow me to be sharp and alive. And when disruptions happen during a show or tangents happen during a show, I can chase them, I think, with no fear. I think that oftentimes in stand-up, what I've noticed is a lot of times stand-ups, it feels like turbulence. You know what I mean? It's like those moments feel to them like this unnatural thing where you're getting shaken around. And for me, I'm just like, oh, this is what my entire 20s was just this feeling of being shaken around.
Right.
So it's given me that advantage. As far as what stand-up has to do with improv, I think it only
it only affected you in that you've realized you've sort of matured as a performer.
Maybe kind of admit what I wanted as an artist, which was to kind of chase some other things that were more self-starter things and more self-focused things. So I think it made me worse at improv. It's the honest answer. Mm-hmm.
But ultimately better as the comedian, Chris Gethard.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
I got another question. It's a little bit more of a technical question for some of our beginner listeners. Oh, did you have one, Nicole? I'm sorry.
But no, you
go for it. No, Nicole.
Nicole, you've been awfully quiet lately.
Please.
Have I said something to offend you?
No, you have not.
Please ask the question.
You seem very quiet.
I am.
Well, we're enthralled.
Are you okay?
I am okay.
What's going on in Nicole Drespel's head?
I'm fine. Nobody cares.
Wait, is something
I care.
Wrong?
I'm asking.
No, nothing's wrong.
Oh my God, I'm so worried.
No, I'm fine.
You have some thoughts right now.
I don't have thoughts. I'm fine.
I never believed that. I learned that about you when we met.
Do you know it's a thought?
Always thinking.
Alex Song has a thought from Twitter.
Oh, yes. This is a great question.
I also just did my secret improv move.
What was your secret improv move?
I don't know if anybody's ever called me out on this. Anytime I'm in a scene that's either not working or especially if a scene's getting like kind of crazy.
You'll be like, what's going on with you?
I'll just stop and be like, you all right? What's going on with you?
I've seen that many times.
So many times. That's my way to like grab my scene partner and be like,
let's figure this out.
Please don't make me do this scene. Please don't make me do this crazy fucking bullshit. Bobby, please. Bobby, what's going on with you? Yoga is my code word to basically say like, Bobby Moynihan, please.
Oh,
I cannot keep up with what you're doing. Slow down and include me.
That's really funny.
Okay, Alex Song's question. How do you stay productive, not burn everything you've built to the ground, when you're going through depressed periods?
I mean, that's a huge major factor in my life. And it's tough and it doesn't always work. There's a couple things. One is a simple piece of advice my shrink gave me, which is like, if I'm trying to get a creative thing done and I've set aside time for it and I'm too, whatever it is, depressed, down and out, distracted, whatever it is, if I'm not getting it done, there's no point in just sitting at your computer staring at Reddit, and then at the end of the day, being mad at yourself for wasting time. Get up, walk away, and go do something that feeds the long-term fires. Some of the best advice I ever got of just like, all right, I'm not getting it done. I'm sitting here, and I have this goal. The goal's not getting accomplished. Rather than just piss away the day so much that I'm furious at myself, I'm going to go see a movie, or I'm going to go walk around, or I'm going to go to a museum or something. Something that I can go be bummed out and do this thing and I don't have to put an effort in something else. But in the long term, it's never a bad thing to experience, you know? So that helps a lot.
When do you know when to make that call and when it's actually right to like stay at your computer and it's going to happen?
Well, I don't know. For me, it's just like a game time decision, I guess, you know? And you know what I think it is? It's if I've actually put in the honest effort. If I haven't put in the honest effort, then I'm just trying to go see a movie during the day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if I've actually sat there and typed some things and deleted them because I thought they were garbage, or typed some things and just stared at them for a while, then yeah, I've put in the honest effort. It's not getting done. I'm getting up, I'm walking away, and this day will have something of value in it, which is to experience life in a bigger way, which also probably not coincidentally might help me get out of this funk, might help inspire me, might help me feel... You know, being when you are not productive, the longer you are not productive, the more exponentially horrible it feels. So sometimes you got to just get up and walk away.
A quick sort of clarification is like, if we're talking about depression in terms of career oriented, I mean, there are people that experience depression outside of that. And I think like, maybe there are times where that depression affects their career choices.
Mm-hmm.
So to say to someone like, oh, go be productive, is kind of tough because that's not even really the problem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are there times where you've used being productive to sort of get yourself out of outside depression? And can you address sort of just outside depression and not sort of career?
Yes. I do think there's a dangerous aspect of this conversation, though, which is that people like me, and I would assume people like Alex, if she's asking this question, we equate professional momentum or creative momentum with success. We have to be very, very careful when talking about this as counter to depression, because what it really is oftentimes that adrenaline rush gets you through that day, gets you over the hump. But then what happens is you keep chasing that adrenaline rush, But what I would say is, for me, it's the only experience I can speak to. So for the, I think I understand your question, Sean, of like the less career long-term stuff, but the more short-term, like day-to-day. Mm-hmm. For me, one of the best ways to not let my depression issues limit my work was to stop hiding them, realize that they're a part of me, and like every other part of me, they should show up in my work. And I probably talk about that stuff too much, but I think that those issues, we tend to stifle them down or not want to show people them because they feel weak. Feels like a reflection of your own weakness, something you fear about yourself that you don't want other people to be able to exploit, so you hide it. When you're in that mindset, it's going to be incredibly hard to be creative in any way because you got walls up and barriers up. So at some point, you got to just admit you're fucked up and walk on stage or grab a pen and paper as that fucked up person and see what happens then. The most important thing I would say, though, is that outside of any romanticism between the relationship between art and depression, this stuff will not solve your problems, and you need to go be happy and healthy. And if that means, for me, I had a point where I had to honestly, very frankly admit to myself, if I go on some new medications that are heavy duty and it does fit that stereotype of like, I'll be in a fog, that's fine because at least I'll be alive. I'd rather be alive and not funny than the funniest fucking guy in the room and crying on my way home every night, which was a stretch of my life. So the most important thing is this stuff is not the same as actually getting real help.
Totally, because if you're always waiting for success to solve your problems, that's a very dangerous relationship to have.
One of the most,
and it's not reliable.
Yeah.
Not at all. I remember one of the most eye-opening conversations I ever had. This helped me so much, and maybe it'll help some of the people who are asking questions like these out there. Is I once went to ASCAT, and I was in the green room, and there were two other people there. I won't name them, but one of them was a Daily Show correspondent at the time. One of them was an SNL cast member at the time. And I walked in, and they were talking, and it was just like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen next. Like, I don't know. Maybe I need to go to LA for a while and just try to like pick something up in the hiatus. Cause I don't know. And they were both going back and forth about how scared they were. And it hit me. I'm so glad it hit me in a concrete way. It was just like, well, I kind of feel like if you get on The Daily Show or you get on SNL, well, that's the kind of success that I've been chasing that I assume will solve my problems. But those guys are stressing out just as hard as I do. So it made me realize like, oh, I'm not going to achieve a thing that will solve this because this is who I am. I can't solve who I am. I could become Will Ferrell or Zach Galifianakis, and I promise you I'd still find ways to be self-destructive and depressed.
And you've seen that with many celebrities going through depression. We obviously lost Robin Williams, but that's an example of you could be at the highest level of success and still be plagued by this sort of
You will be plagued.
Yeah.
You will be. And success is not going to heal you. So don't worry about it. Just worry about trying to make something. Worry about really being honest about who you are while you make it. And if that's the case, I bet you can push through depression because it'll become a motivator and a friend to your work as opposed to an enemy of it.
Great. Can we ask an audio question?
Mm-hmm.
We've got a question here. This one I think goes out to some of our more beginner improvisers, but we've very rarely get to hear your advice on these sort of questions because I feel like...
Oh, this is going to be some nerdy shit, isn't it?
No, not at all.
I go analogous or do I
no,
go...
No.
How do you feel about plot?
Gethard? I think it's one that...
Oh, don't get me started on
plot. Listen,
Gethard,
I don't want to even get into that. I think this is one
themes.
You can definitely
don't get me started
answer.
On themes. Don't ever bring up themes.
This really? Question...
Who wants to talk about themes? Stop worrying about themes and just do the thing.
All right, this question is from Jules Pigott.
Hello, my question is, what is your advice for getting out of your head in the improv scene and to stop, like, thinking so much and to, like, just start doing things instead of just thinking about them? Thanks. Bye.
This is a question we get from a lot of improvisers in the, like, sort of 101, 201, 301 level.
And Jules, a friend of the Gethard Show. Yes. Hello, Jules. I would say this. It's a lesson we always have to remind ourselves that you learn again and again and again and again. I feel like 90% of the time, no matter what level of improv you're at, when you're struggling with something, you need to remember that improv works because of the person who's up there with you. That's how you get out of your head. I think every single time. The answers are not in your head. Anyway, they're not on the floor when you decide to cross your arms and look down. They're not on the back line when you decide to lean against it and stare at the ceiling because you're so frustrated. You're beating yourself up about the last move. The bottom line is if you're in your head, you're there. The sad part is I don't think you can take yourself out of your head, but your scene partner can. So give over. Because if you're up there with someone and you're taking care of them and they're honor bound to take care of you, they'll get you where you need to go. And you can stop worrying about it. When you're in your head, that is oftentimes, if you are dwelling on it to the point where you're staying stuck there, it's your responsibility. But if you're in your head, it's your partner's responsibility to get you out of there. I know when I'm on stage, like, I think one of the reputations I'm most proud of is that I'm always looking to facilitate as often as possible. If someone has an idea, I'm like, how do we get it out? What's your idea? Let's get it going, get it going. It's the other person's job. So
that's an
interesting. Give over. Give in. Give over.
That's a very interesting answer. I don't think I've heard in any sort of form, because it's like, how do I get out of my head is such a personal question. But the answer really is the scene is in your scene partner and everyone else on stage.
And the scene doesn't start until the second line. That's another thing we often forget. Whatever the initiation is, no matter what you heard in the opening, and we drill initiation so hard in the school, which I'll keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
I'll keep my mouth shut about how hard we drill that. No matter what the initiation is, no matter how brilliantly formed it is, how crystal clear it is, the reaction to it is what sets the pattern. You don't have a pattern until you see how someone reacts to it, and then you can start whipping it back and forth. I'm amazed all over, everywhere. Like, it's weird because now I tend to only teach improv workshops when I'm out of town and I am booked to do them as part of a gig where it's part of what I have to do to get the gig and pay money. But all over the country, I'll challenge you guys. And in your classes, notice this. How often, let's get a suggestion. Someone says the suggestion and what you have is 8 improvisers looking at the ground or the walls, or just their brows start furrowing as they think. People, their instinct is not to just look at each other. It's amazing. If you start looking for it in your classes, anybody who's out there listening to this, start noticing that. A suggestion gets said, where do people look? It's very rarely at each other. And my guess is that you will notice is the people who do look at each other first tend to be relaxed and tend to be the best ones in the class. I would bet on it more often than not.
I would totally agree. And a lot of times when, even in just like situations, even like the pattern game, the most like regimented situation, I'm constantly saying like, don't look at the ground, look at each other.
Yeah.
And immediately the ideas start sort of bouncing around faster.
We have to always remind ourselves, this doesn't matter. And I'm not saying that in a condescending way, I'm saying that in a way that the best improv show that's ever happened, whatever you've heard was the best show. Whether it took place in Chicago or New York, maybe LA at this point. As soon as it was over, it was gone. Doesn't matter. No matter how good it was. So you might as well give yourself permission that no matter how bad it is, it doesn't matter either. It doesn't matter. You could call your mom and say, I had the best show, like, the best show I ever, part of why I stopped improvising is because the Stepfathers did a show that I know is the best show I'm ever going to do. And I've been chasing it for 12 years. So why am I going to keep doing it? I'll never be that good at this again. That was the peak. And if I called my mom the next day and I was like, Ma, we did this show last night where we did half the show. And then the second half of the show, we did it backwards. We rewound the show and they got to, she'd be like, all right.
Okay.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations.
Yeah.
It was at DCM, Mom. all these people who really cared saw it. It was all the stars aligned between the quality of the show and the nature of the audience. She'd be like, I don't give a fuck. Who gives a shit? Who cares?
Very interesting.
So if it's going to, you know, it never, ever matters if it's bad. So look to each other. Because that's what you do have. The only thing that you still have afterwards is those people. That's what always kills me. When I was coaching, one thing that would get me, it's like, you can have a terrible show and go to the bar and laugh about it, as long as you're all in it together. But then sometimes maybe somebody makes too many moves or gets a little shitty or cocky, or maybe people bail on each other, or maybe people push and pull at the idea, and then you just get off stage and you go in 8 different directions. So you can have bad shows, you can have good shows. Neither one matters. Might as well have good relationships with the people always, in every case, on stage and off. Take care of each other. Let each other take care of you. It's never about you anyway, so get out of your own head.
Mm. Yeah, that's the perfect answer, I think.
Nicole, are you okay?
I'm great.
You seem so bored and unhappy
that I'm
here.
I'm not bored. I keep nodding.
I said something.
No, yeah, here's what it is.
You're nodding. It looks like you're falling asleep.
Well, you're wrong. That's you reading into it. Hey,
no,
are
because
you okay?
I'm okay.
Are you okay?
But here's the thing.
No,
for long stretches of your presence in this community, you did not like me, Nicole.
That's
all right,
not
let's
true.
Just get
I'm worried.
It.
I'm
let's
worried that this is returning. You didn't like me. You thought I was a big fake, and you still think it.
I think part of
that's why you'd never return to the Gethard Show and do Weenie Feet Bobbins ever again. People ask for it all the time.
I'm not going to do that because why would I ever revisit the greatest professional success I've ever
people
had in my life?
People ask me all the time.
Yeah.
I was in the chat room
I'm
for the show
I'm going out
yesterday.
On a high note.
I was saying to them, like, if we get a season 2, what should we do? And multiple people said, bring back Weenie Feet.
Yeah, I'll come back. I'll come back when it's Oscar winner Nicole Dressbell
oh
coming back to do
God.
Weenie Feet Bobbins. As of right now, that's the high point of my life. I'm not risking ruining that.
All the Gethard Show fans will love hearing that.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Usually we drive everything into the ground on that show. You yeah. refuse.
Nope.
You refuse to nope. let it get to a place where people hate it.
Absolutely not. Wow. No, here's what it is. You're saying great stuff, and I agree with all of it. So I don't need to talk just to talk.
And it's
so
just
the audience
upsetting
can't see.
For her.
It's
how
very
right
upsetting.
But I'm nodding.
You
not
look,
upsetting
you
how
look
I
upset.
Am. Oh, wait, but let's talk more about how I didn't like you. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you didn't like me.
I never
I was
said,
a big fake.
I never said you were a fake.
Because I taught all the Thank what You is? Robot guys, and you heard about it all, and you thought
no.
I was a big fake.
What? It was not Thank You Robot.
Because I taught all those guys, and you're close with those guys.
You're talking about Chris Scott. Chris Scott only has respect for you. I stopped liking you when you came back to do those classes, and Drew Johnston is the person you should be blaming.
Really? What did
Drew Johnston
say?
And I went to get pizza before we saw a movie in the West Village, and he said, I'm taking this Gethard class, and he says Harold Knight is bullshit. And I had just gotten on Harold Knight, and I was miserable, but I sort of felt like, fuck that guy?
Yeah.
I never said you were a fake. I said you were a cult leader. That's different.
Jesus. But cult leaders are fake. They're fake religious figures. They're
I
promising
some
things
of them,
that they can't
I think
deliver on.
Some of those guys believe it.
I think in the end, we've all seen that Gethard is not a cult leader at the UCB because, I mean, he chose to step away to
lead the cult elsewhere.
To lead the cult elsewhere.
Yeah, retired cult leader.
Fuck Harold Knight, and I stand by that. Not in the sense of fuck Harold Knight, but fuck the way that people let it wreck them and their creative momentum, and fuck the way that our community doesn't actively have some safeguards in place to stop that a little bit more than it does.
No, I think that's
I
now
viewed
I
myself
think that's
as that safeguard in the community.
Sure.
What other teacher was standing up then and saying, stop, like, stop. Stop worrying about this fucking shit. I'm not going to cut you. I don't care. I'm not going to tell Anthony if you're good enough to get on or bad enough to be removed. I don't care. Who cares about that? I don't care.
For sure.
That's what I was saying about fuck Harold Knight. And I got Nicole Dressmel years running now telling Drew Johnson over pizza, fuck you.
Yeah.
Gethard.
But then I took parentheses.
And you cried.
All right. Well, let's not.
Wait, no. I do want to set the record straight.
People ask me about that. Parentheses has become a thing, huh?
Yes, it's become a pretty 100%. Big thing.
I didn't know that. That's only
students know about it. Stories get passed
down.
Look
at the lineup. Like, there's so many people who are still around.
Yeah.
And parentheses also fed directly into the Gethard Show like that. You worked with Drew and Noah in parentheses right before that show started. So I think it has a legacy attached to that. Murph, right.
JD, of course.
But the
Weenie Feet
the
Bobbins.
Legend the legend is that I took that that class to prove you wrong. Which
that is, I heard that many times.
I know, which is
during
against,
the class.
Like, I think Drew Johnston was the source of that.
Drew's
again.
A little gossip, isn't he?
Drew's a
Drew's can be a fucking gossip.
Drew's a gossip. I don't have $400 to prove a person wrong.
I feel like one of the things I love about you, because we really came to become buddies in
yes,
that class.
Absolutely,
very much so.
Yep.
You really, because I also feel like you. It's so funny that you told me. You're telling me now that part of it was I said fuck Harold Knight. Because who's ever said fuck Harold Knight harder than you? Aren't you the person who just walked away and you were like, nah, no thanks? And then they came back and said, well, please. And you were like, eh.
I think you're talking about how I got an invite to an invite audition. After
oh, that's
being
what it was.
Cut and didn't.
You said no
audition.
Thanks on that invite.
Yes, I did. Ooh, I did
I'm
no
doing my own
thing.
Because why? Because I'm doing my own things now and I'm happy and I'm feeling fulfilled.
Yeah.
I don't need to chase a construct, a community construct of what defines success.
For sure.
Not if it's a thing that makes me stressed out or unhappy.
But that was also after parentheses. I don't think I had that perspective before that class.
Look at that. We just shared a fist pound.
Yep. Fist pump.
Yeah. It's about empowerment. It's about being a cult leader.
Absolutely. If you have, you know, bad messengers like Drew Johnston, the message gets garbled.
And I think it's also very easy.
You get known for the flashiest stuff.
I was just going to say, I think sometimes people talk about some of the stuff I've done in classes because that's the stuff that's fun to talk about in a bar. But they don't talk about the endless hours of thought I put into why that stuff is necessary. And they don't tend to say, oh, he also got in my corner and like sat me down personally and said, you keep doing this and this and this in your scene work, regular scene work. I've never said running around Penn Station and standing in front of people to see what they do makes you good at improv. But I have looked at a group of people and said, well, you guys are already good at things like this and this and this, and you're not so good at this. And my guess is that maybe the thing that you're not so good at can be helped if you go down to Penn Station and get in someone's face. And the reasons for that are manyfold. And we could take hours explaining them. But also, I think some of the times I've also noticed is that it's on me to explain that a little bit better. And sometimes I ask people to do things, and I don't necessarily say, just do it first and see if it helps, and then it helps and we all move on. And maybe there's not, here's why I thought that would work and here's why it ultimately did. So sometimes people only have that story to tell, but they don't realize, well, I was trying to embolden you in this specific area, or I wanted to see almost all those early classes that led to parentheses. The whole idea was people don't actually say yes to each other anymore. How hard can I get people to say yes? Look how many scenes we see these days. This drives me fucking nuts. Here's the thing that makes me not like watching improv. How many scenes? Here's the initiation, and the second line is just somebody explaining why they don't like the initiation or what's wrong with the initiation, why it's incorrect. Why? If that didn't need that, why did you do it? Why did it have to be, well, Pa, sorry I didn't get around to milking the cows today, but, the football game's coming up on Saturday. Well, now the cows' udders are going to be over, da-da-da. Why couldn't you just say, yeah, the football game is important. Let's let the fucking cows' udders swell. Let's get you ready for football. How come it had to be everything that's wrong with it? And that one lends itself to being wrong. Do you guys know what I mean? Everything, every second line is like, let me nitpick you, and now you just defend. And the pattern, quote-unquote, is just, I'll tell you why you're wrong and you'll defend yourself. And that's the pattern. That's not a fucking pattern. That's playing it too safe. So, yeah. Like, when I see things like that, I'm like, oh, we just don't even say yes as a community. So a lot of those early exercises, it was like, how big will you say yes? Will you actually say yes? And just pointing out all the ways that people wouldn't, and just drilling that. But then I also need to put my money where my mouth is and say, well, however big you want to go, I have to let it go too. I can't be scared. And that's how you wind up in situations where you do so much damage to a room that Will Hines tells you have to teach for free until it's fixed. But it's in the spirit of saying yes. That's all that shit was. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this guy. Do you guys remember that guy Sterling Hurst?
I don't think so.
He wasn't around so long. I think he moved out of town. He was acting background. Fascinating dude. Good actor. I don't know if he was ever destined to be the best improviser. I think he left town. I don't think it was like his ultimate passion. I think he was doing it because he's an actor. But I'll never forget doing that once and saying, like, whatever happens, say yes to it. Take it where it wants to go and just turn off the part of your brain that ever stops it or says no or says what's wrong with it. Just keep saying yes to whatever's happening. If you're not comfortable, just walk away. But don't try to regulate it. Let's see what happens if something's actually not regulated. And just the idea of just furthering it, embracing it, is at its core. And this fucking guy Sterling just heard that, stood up, left the room, and everybody turned and looked at me. And I just sat there, didn't react. And I think it hit them of like, oh, if we want to say yes to that guy, we better just go where he's going. And that was the start of that. And then that one went outside. I think that was the one where they were outside yelling at outside a police station that we are a gang, you will not arrest us. And it's just like, yeah, like, I'll take the hit on that. But my guess is that that's not bullshit, and that's not I'm making them run around and go crazy, and I'm not telling them fucking screaming and yelling is making you go farther. It's me saying, what would happen if you could really forget that an audience is there and just say yes to another human being with no other motive except furthering their idea? What could happen if we, how far can we take that? What will happen if we can actually do that on stage? I bet you'll be a little less tempted to worry about the audience or the teachers taking notes or the grade you're getting.
I think I agree with you. But one thing that I think is important to make a distinction about is when you're saying yes to someone, there are times where I think your example of like, oh, they offer up this idea, then you offer up what the problem is, right? I think there are times that I've seen a lot. Someone will offer up an initiation, and by someone just blindly saying yes to it, the person almost feels like they're not saying yes to my idea.
Well, that's another thing that took me many years. It probably took me 8 or 9 years to learn, which is that you say yes to the actor, not the character.
Yep, we've said
we forget that all the time. We forget that all the time. If somebody walks up to you and says, like, you're a fucking dickhead, and I'm going to punch you in the face, you don't say, yeah, I am a dickhead. Punch me in the face. Because what they want is a fight. So the actor wants a fight. So saying fighting is saying yes to the idea of a fight.
Right.
You don't say yes to the character, and you don't definitely don't say yes to what the character is verbalizing. You say yes to the actor and the actor's intent, the actor's wants. And an initiation is really one actor asking another actor for something. And what you need to do while you're saying yes is give them what they're asking for. That's saying yes.
Right. Because there are times where blindly saying yes can lead you to like crazy town or just something unbelievable. Like you were saying, unbelievable sort of acting.
I'm talking about situations specifically where I'm working with high level people who have trained themselves into habits that's I'm so smart and I'm so funny that we can just start a bicker match.
Right.
And that'll be a scene. Right. That was driving me nuts. And that's why all those classes started. It's driving me nuts.
Right. Well, let's have one. Do you need?
Ben's face was just great.
Chris, do you have any final words for our listeners? Anything that you want to impart on the community? Give you open forum to say whatever you want.
Now this, you know, is trouble.
I mean, that's why I saved it for the end.
I know.
We subdued you, though, before we asked this question.
I know. You made me talk very, very carefully about matters of race.
Because I feel like we don't have theater meetings anymore. And that was when Gethard got to stand up and say, this is what I think should be said. And I think those are important.
And now I'm
not
involved enough. I have no right to say those anymore.
Or is there anything you've ever said historically that you'd like this opportunity to take back?
To take back.
Anything you've ever stood up in a meeting and said,
specific?
No. But I'm just saying, like, if there have been enough times.
I always kill it at those meetings.
Yeah, it's always inspiring to walk away from those meetings.
Well.
And it might be stuff we've already touched on, right?
Well, here's what I would say.
Yeah.
Is. You tell me if I'm right or wrong. You guys say that some people used to think of me as a guru. And that's very flattering, but I think more what people saw me as truthfully is not guru so much as this guy maybe says some things that are a little bit off the company line, but that I appreciate hearing in a class. I think that was a reputation I had. That maybe sometimes I'd say things like, Harold Knight's not going to get you so far. You think it's going to get you really far. It'll do pretty good for you. I'd tell people that an agent of mine once told me, I never go to see improv shows because you watch people and you're like, I think that person's funny, but what if they just had a good night?
Yeah.
I tell people that. You don't always hear that in classes. So as the guy who sometimes says that, maybe I would just say this, is that if there's one thing I would say, how direct do I want to be? I got to make sure this doesn't come off as negative because I want to make it a challenge. First thing I would say is to the performers on our stage, specifically in the places like Harold Knight. I assume Lloyd Knight, though I've never gone. It was starting up after my time. This is a small pond. That's a beautiful thing. Let's not forget it. What I mean by that is the your time at UCB and your time on our stage is something you should value highly and you should honor greatly. If this is what you're meant to do, it's also the beginning of something. It's not the end. And it's on the coaches and the performers, I think, to remember that maybe a little bit more than they were at my tail end of the time there. I don't mean this to be harsh, but what I mean is I think our community has become one that is a little bit, it can support a pod, it can support a self-indulgent podcast about its own history.
As big as the community's gotten, it's become the entire world for some people.
And that's my whole point, is there's a much bigger world out there, and that if there's a level of self-satisfaction in our shows, we are going to lose a step to people who recognize that there is a bigger world out there. I want to see a little less I'm going to get as far as I can at UCB, and a little bit more, this place is going to be my home base while I attack the shit out of the world.
Is part of it focusing on Harold Knight, for example, more as an artistic opportunity and less as a professional opportunity?
Yes. I will be so bold as to say that, in my opinion, Harold Knight is not a professional opportunity.
It may be a professional distraction.
I mean, you have to pay
to
do it.
In some cases, yes. Yes. Yeah. And it feels like you get membership into a club that leads to more professional opportunities. To a certain degree, that is true. It is far overblown how true that is. If you have goals to become a professional, that should be one piece of your arsenal. And I think what you can do and should do with your time at UCB is get everything you can out of your time here by A, learning as much as you can, and then B, earning the right to go on stage as often as possible, not just in improv, and everywhere you can. And by making it your home base, anybody, I think, would agree with that. Anybody in a position of authority would not feel threatened by that. It is the theater's job to lift you up, not your job to lift it up. You are an ambassador for it. You're someone who represents it. I've barely performed. You guys know I've barely performed here over the last few years. Still, any press I did for the Gethard show, first thing everybody asks me, UCB, UCB, UCB. I will always be a part of this theater. It will always be a part of me. I'll always be an ambassador for it. Remember that your job is to get your, you know, take your arsenal of weapons and get them as sharp as possible while you're here and then go out. And the other side of the coin I would say to all the students is no need to wait in line. No need to wait in line. If one thing ain't happening for you, there's other things out there. And they're all over this city. They're all over this city. And you can meet the people here who are going to be your tribe for life. If you get those people, then you got it. If you're biding your time and waiting at UCB, that's great. If you want to put in the time to get on the stage, get on Harold Knight, whatever it is, great, do it. But don't be idle. And don't feel like that's the only line you can wait in. Just do other stuff. Get out there. See the world. Go see all the shows. Anybody who's just seeing improv shows and their quest to be an improviser, no, see every show at UCB. Go see every show everywhere. You hear about something good, something cool, go see it. Go see other comedy. Go see music. Go see art, man. If you really have something to say, you have to find a way to say it. And you cannot and should not wait for someone else's permission to say it. You'll get that permission. But the good news is, if you keep working and finding all these other avenues, you'll make yourself better progressively faster, and you will get on to get where you need to go at UCB even quicker, because you're making yourself better and you're challenging yourself more and you're absorbing more experiences and viewpoints. So never wait in line. Never wait in line if you're a student. That doesn't mean reject it or walk away from it. It means get busy while you're waiting. If you get as busy as you can so you don't feel like you're waiting, it'll make you better. It'll make everything happen quicker. It'll make you, it'll make it sweeter when you get there. Because one of the main things I see is that we need a little bit more, how would I say it? Like, you know, I'm a fucking white trash Irish Catholic dude from New Jersey, and it took me a long time to even recognize that an artist is something I wanted to be. But I think we need to be liberated as artists and not feel signed off on as artists. We need to feel like we're being brought onto stages, whether it's UCB or elsewhere, because we have value to bring to those stages and we have a viewpoint that needs to be shared via those stages. So let's seek less approval from the powers that be and from the audiences, and let's say the things we really have to say and want to say with our art, and let the approval come to us. One of the main things that I think I used to push as a teacher is we do what we do for the stage, not for the seats. Stop worrying about the audience. Worry about the stage. What do you want to say? Say it. Find the people who help you say it. Work with them. Find the situations that allow you to say it. Become involved in them. Stop worrying about the seats. Stop worrying about all the other stuff. You have something to say, you need to go say it. If it's at UCB, that's awesome. If it's elsewhere, that's awesome. It's awesome. It's why you're a student. It's why the students, remember, the school and the theater are separate. Remember that. Being a student at one doesn't mean you just have to wait for the other. If you're waiting, there's so many other things to do. It doesn't devalue this opportunity at UCB, but it does underestimate yourself to not be as active as possible in the meantime. So I think that's what I'd say. Everybody stop giggling at your own jokes. Remember that when you're doing improv shows, most of your fucking audiences are also improvisers. So that's another thing I'll say, Sean and Nicole.
Ooh.
Here's another thing I'll say. You need to fucking, you want me to be a dick on the way out? Tough love?
Let's do it.
If you're only doing improv shows for other improvisers, you might not be funny. So go to other places and check. Go do some shows at some places without fucking improvisers in the audience and see if you get a laugh there. And if not, get back to work. This whole idea that I'm going to get on a weekend team because then I can stop rehearsing, bullshit. You might not be funny.
I mean, you're pointing to me because bullshit. That is something that I had a long talk with Will Hines about before he moved away. I was like, the culture of improv seems to be the higher you get in status, the less you have to work at doing it.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
It's... I think there is a different, I would say, I don't know, this is for me, stepfathers didn't rehearse. Actually, we did in our early days. We did rehearse for like our first year, actually, now that I think of it. But that being said, everything moves quicker these days. Some of these weekend teams, you could rehearse. Just based on the amount of time you put in, the amount of reps you put in. I don't know anything about your work. I'm not claiming I'm coming to see shows. I'm not trying to be a dickhead. Just rehearse. Why not make it as the best it can be? Delaney don't need to rehearse anymore. Delaney's been doing this for 25, 30 years. Mm-hmm. Delaney's rehearsed all he needs to rehearse. You've been doing this 3 years, 4 years? Rehearse. Don't take this as a criticism. Take it as a challenge that you are an artist who could be better, and I want to see you be as good as you can possibly be.
Oh boy.
And if you only perform for improvisers, take some time every couple months, go do a show elsewhere, and just check. I say this from a place of experience. Where I thought I was really fucking funny, and when I started venturing out to other circumstances where it wasn't the hometown crowd, I found out that I was decently funny.
It's for sure a crutch to have a crutch. Your people around you.
Is that a dick move? Did I just say shit? Great.
I think you've been saying things
super
that
helpful
are...
And I think it's smart, but unlike anything we've heard said
yes.
before.
I think, and I'm not saying, I'm not throwing rocks at people on the weekend teams. I'm not trying to. All I'm saying is this. Have you gotten as good as you're going to get? If not, you should be working to put yourself in the position where you are.
Oh, I want to delve into this more, but we'll
Jesus
talk
Christ.
Offline.
Gethard,
that's really smart.
This has been, I think, one of the best interviews I've ever conducted.
Look at that, Sean.
You have amazing insight. Thank you for coming in and talking
Please.
To us for so long. I do want to say, I did get the impression of you on my phone. So I'm
you
gonna
did.
Yes, I have an impression of Chris Gethard from one of my students. We're gonna tack it on to the end of the episode.
I don't get to hear it yet.
I'm gonna play it for you now, but okay. We're not gonna have time to really talk too much about right. it. But thank you so much for doing this.
Take
Chris.
That mute on. All right. You stepped up, Gethard stepped up. Next shot in this war belongs to you, mute on.
I think maybe the next shot will be Jesse Lee, but we'll see
I
what
love
happens.
That guy.
Thank you so much for being
love
here.
Mute on too.
Feed the nerds, go on iTunes, leave reviews, and good night, everybody.
Hi, Sean. It's Gethard. Listen, man, you and Nicole are doing good. You know, the podcast is really good. I'm happy that it's been revived and you're doing all these things for the community and people are really liking it. A lot of good things, a lot of really positive things you guys are doing. I'm really proud of you guys. Really great to see you guys doing this. It's just one thing. Why haven't I been on an episode yet? Like, I don't know. I feel like, what am I doing? What am I doing right now? I have my own TV show and I'm calling Sean Distin to beg to be on his podcast. Fuck. I don't know. I really want to be on. All right.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversation podcast. If you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and do that. And you can also go to iTunes and leave a rating or review. That would really help us out. In the future, if you want to ask us questions or ask questions to our guests, you can follow us on Twitter at UCB Convo and look for postings there on future guests and future activity. Guys, I'm feeding the nerds left and right. We'll see you next week.